这个小妹子啊，你这是第一次来当，还是想当我？
First of all, this morning, I just want to say hello. Nice to see all of you here. It really brings great delight to see so many of you who have gathered together in order to engage in the recitation of the Mani Mantra as well as to meditate on compassion. This is really something quite fantastic in our world.In our world, all people, animals, every being with life longs to experience only happiness, a life freed of all pains and misery. There's no difference between any being in this regard.The happiness that we do experience, this comes from one of two sources, either in relation to our physical being, our body, or in relation to our way of thinking, our mind. And likewise, with all unwanted circumstances, suffering, pain, and misery, this too comes about in dependence on our body, as well as, or secondly, as in dependence on our way of thinking, our minds.To eradicate all unwanted difficulties, then there are different techniques, one of which is to rely on the material world. So, for example, we'll ensure that we have sufficient food to eat, especially nutritious food, that we wear suitable clothing that's suitable to the climate, we live in a comfortable home, and when ill, we will take required medical treatment.And this comes about either directly in dependence on our own activity or in addition through the activities of others. However, the mental happiness, the mental peace and tranquility that we all long for, as well as all mental frustrations that we experience and want to be freed from, whatever material conditions we encounter, these cannot change our mental position.We cannot attain a state of lasting peace and happiness, a state freed from suffering, just through taking medication or having a conducive material conditions. This doesn't apply to us or any other living being. Rather, it comes about in dependence on transforming our way of thinking. And this itself comes about in dependence on a sequence of steps. First, we have to recognize what it is, what it means to experience suffering, pain on the mental level, as well as then recognize or thereafter recognize the causes that lead to that. Then we need to come to understand what are the causes that will eradicate all unwanted forms of mental anguish, as well as the causes that are required to bring about mental happiness. And then fourthly, we need to apply ourselves to the cultivation of the causes that lead to happiness and the cultivation of the causes that eradicate all forms of mental anguish, whether strong and powerful and overwhelming, or as well as those which are just slight and disturbing. And this fourth step, this is the step of meditation, where we deepen our familiarity, our habituation to a particular way of thinking, and weaken and eventually eradicate our habituation to a harmful way of thinking. The primary way of thinking to cultivate, to experience happiness, is that of love and compassion. As we develop an ever stronger outlook that's infused with loving kindness, this brings about happiness. We have our own experience, our lived experience, as well as what we've observed in the world, to recognize the faults of aggression. When the mind is afflicted and disturbed, wanting things to go one's own way, and it gets frustrated, when it doesn't, anger arises. And we see the harm that this brings to relationships within a family, relationships within society, or between communities, as well as what we've observed in the animal world, where animals will be aggressive towards each other, wanting things to go their way, wanting to dominate, wanting to have the favorable resources, food and so forth, for themselves. We have lived experience of the faults of aggression, and we also have observed it. On the other hand, whether someone is a follower of any religion or no religion at all, it is universally accepted that an outlook of loving kindness, this brings benefit to not only oneself, but within one's home, within our interactions between people in our place of work and community, as well as our interactions with other beings such as animals. An attitude of loving kindness benefits all, oneself and everyone who is fortunate enough to interact with a person who is loving and kind.
And
Loving kindness itself is consciousness, it's a mind. So therefore, it is a mental consciousness, a way of thinking that we need to cultivate and develop within ourselves so that it dominates us. And in terms of the retreat you're doing a Chenrezig retreat. And whilst amongst all the Buddhas, there's no way to differentiate them in terms of qualities, saying some have greater qualities in this area and others have greater qualities in that area. All their qualities are developed to the point of perfection. So there's no difference between the strength and the pervasiveness of love and compassion within one Buddha as opposed to another. However, the Buddha Chenrezig is presented in a particular visual form, which is the expression of the compassion of all the Buddhas. That you are utilizing your free time to gather here and to engage in the Chenrezig retreat, developing love and compassion within yourselves, deepening your habituation to this outlook, this way of thinking. This is really wonderful. It's a rare opportunity. It's rare for people to take such opportunities when they come about. And what you are doing here is something of great value and extremely precious as well. I've selected some verses to look at today, and again when we meet in a couple of days' time. So the first one is from the first chapter of the of Shantideva's Engaging in the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. So I think everyone has these, yeah? So the one we're going to look at now, like a supreme gold-making elixir, from the unclean body we have taken to the body of a Buddha, a priceless jewel is transformed. Such is bodhicitta, therefore, seize it firmly. The verses we'll look at are short, they're each four-line verses, but the meaning contained within them is profound. So we'll just briefly explore some of the profundity of the meaning that they present. So looking at the first line of this particular verse, a gold-making elixir. Gold-making, an elixir that makes gold, this we understand as being something that transforms an ordinary piece of metal into gold. So whether such a thing exists in the world or not, who knows? But nevertheless, it's used here as a simile, as a metaphor. And here, when one has, or were one to have an elixir that could transform a piece of metal into gold, it would be able to completely transform that metal into gold. Not just give it a golden hue or transform just a corner into gold, but the entire piece, small or great, into gold itself. Such an elixir wouldn't just slightly transform the metal, not a piece or a part of it, but it in entirety, because it would be of very little value if within iron remained or metal remained, or just the outer was a thin layer of gold. That wouldn't be of much use. Such an elixir would transform the metal in its entirety into gold, thoroughly, throughout, pervasively. Moreover, an elixir would be able to transform a single piece of metal into a far vaster quantity of gold, an immense quantity of gold, in fact. And why is this desirable? Why are we talking about here about the gold as being, or the quantity of gold as being something that one would want? Because even in our religious context, gold has serves a great benefit. So as was recognized earlier, all beings want to be freed of suffering and live in a life without any problems or difficulties. And if one has wealth, such as a vast quantity of gold, then one can largely overcome material suffering. One can live in somewhere comfortable, have suitable clothing to wear, sufficient nutritious food to eat, afford whatever medical treatment is required, and moreover, not only for oneself, but one would be able to help others in general as well. So therefore, having a quantity of gold, even from a religious perspective, or having wealth, serves a valuable purpose. Second two lines. From the unclean body we have taken to the body of a Buddha, a priceless jewel is transformed. The unclean body that is referred to is the body of all humans and animals. So the bodies that we all possess, as well as all other humans and animals. Let's look a little bit at the meaning of this term unclean. So why is it that our body is referred to as unclean? So this can be understood in many ways, but what we can certainly recognize from our own lived experience is how our body, the comfort and the ease that we are hopefully experiencing now, is not at all stable. We know just from a slight change in conditions that we can quickly, rapidly transform from a physical place of comfort and ease to one of either slight or even immense suffering. The slight change in temperature, we will become too hot. It will change slightly again, and now we'll be a little chilly. Or, as we know, it's very evident in our world right now, just from inhaling a small quantity of bacteria, immense sickness can follow. So our physical state is not at all stable. It can change slightly or immensely from encountering the slightest of causes. And why is this the case? This is the case because our body has come about in dependence on causes, and those causes themselves are not pure. Therefore, the result is a body that has a basis that is faulty. What is the cause that led to this unclean body, this body that can at any time fall into a state of suffering? The cause is karma. Not any karma. It's not pure karma, but contaminated karma. And why is that karma called contaminated? Because it was accumulated, the karma itself was accumulated through mental afflictions, a motivating intention that itself was polluted or defiled by the afflictions, our disturbing emotions. So therefore, when the result, this body, has come about in dependence on karma that is contaminated due to having been accumulated by a motivation that is afflicted, the result is going to be a body like we have. That is one way to understand the meaning of unclean. The body we have taken then is unclean for the reasons I've just presented. But the body of a Buddha, which is here likened to a priceless jewel, this is not at all unclean. This is a body that is pure. And it's pure because the causes that led to the attainment of the state of Buddhahood or the bodies of a Buddha, those causes are vastly different from the causes that led to our own bodies. So our own body came about in dependence on contaminated karma and afflictions. The body of a Buddha comes about in dependence on virtue, on merit, as well as prayer. And those prayers too are stainless, they are without fault, and that virtue is of vast, immeasurable quantity. Because the causes of the state of Buddhahood or the body of a Buddha is virtue and prayers, the body that it leads to is not at all clean, but it's pure. And the happiness that is experienced is lasting, stable. There's no possibility of the happiness ever even fluctuating, let alone being punctuated by the slightest suffering. And such a body is likened here to a priceless jewel. And the term priceless indicates that it is beyond compare, beyond measure. So this shows that the state of Buddhahood, the body of a Buddha, is supreme. In our homes, we recognize that if something is dirty, we recognize this and immediately try to clean it. For example, after one's eaten a meal or even just drunk from a cup, we recognize it is no longer clean and we need to clean it. We see that when we recognize something as being dirty, when we recognize that something is dirty, we see it as undesirable. This is not how we want it to be. We want it to be clean. Likewise, when we come to understand the role that our afflictions in particular play within our lives and the lives of others, these afflictions, the cause of this unclean body, the cause of the karma that led to this unclean body, these we have to abandon. Our afflicted minds, our disturbing emotions, these are of the class that is, we can call unclean or impure. Our afflictions, such as anger, pride, attachment, these arise so readily. The slightest of causes, our afflictions arise, and our mind is once again polluted. On the other side is virtue. Virtue is of the class of purity, or the class of being clean, as opposed to the afflictions, which are of the unclean or the impure class. What we need to do is strengthen the side of virtue, the class of being clean or pure, and weaken and start to even eradicate our afflictions, which are on the side of impurity or being unclean. So just like we take care of ourselves and our home, so too we need to take care of our mind in this way. In brief, then, what has been looked at here in these couple of lines, in the second and third line, is that our body is unclean because it arose from contaminated karma, karma which is contaminated because it was accumulated by minds that were afflicted by, for example, ignorance, anger, pride, attachment, and so forth. The body of a Buddha, though, is clean. Why? Because it arose from karma, karma that is pure, that wasn't accumulated by even a trace of the afflictions, as well as prayer. And if I were to ask you, or really anyone, which body would you prefer? The one that we currently have, which is always on a knife edge of things getting worse than they currently are? Or would you rather have a body that is stable, that is free of problems, will always be free of problems, and where one only experiences lasting happiness? Everyone will make the same choice. Recognizing this, immediately the question follows, so how to attain such a pure body? How to attain the state of Buddhahood? The body that we currently abiding in is the unclean body for the reasons presented. And whilst that is the case, we can look at this body that we have in two ways. One is that it is a basis for suffering. It is very realistic to call it the basis of suffering. It's pervaded by faults because we experience so much suffering due to having such a body. But that is not the entire story. There's the second way to have it, a second way to look at this body, in that it presents the opportunity of great benefit, an opportunity of transformation.
And then he gave 那这个不如现在现在干嘛去五月天天在包括姐姐先姐干嘛晒土呀？但俺就女姐姐天天天天，俺那个是上了大学不管，你那么久去五去养活过来是？就是俺们男性如果来天天要买来是，天天去土要买来钱。
Whilst the body of humans and animals are the same in being impure, in that they came about in dependence on the cause of contaminated karma accumulated through the afflictions. Whilst they are the same in this regard, and being the basis of suffering, the bodies of humans are vastly different in another way, in that they present great potential. This is primarily in relation to our intelligence, in that through our intelligence, we are able to use our body in very skillful ways. For example, in differing climates, we can attain different fruits, grow different crops, and so forth. We can take care of our physical situation so well in different climates, if it's too hot or too cold, we, through the use of our body and our intelligence, we can take care of ourselves. Likewise, through our intelligence, we have developed phenomenal technology. We can travel around the world in really very little time. We can communicate with others all over. We can, through medical development, heal ourselves and others so effectively. Not only that, but we can help others in times of suffering. The intention to help others of animals is very limited. But for humans, we readily as well as skillfully help not only our loved ones, but strangers too. So this is, or these are characteristics of this human body that really great benefit and purpose can be achieved upon having this basis despite being unclean. When we compare humans and animals, we see how very different our intelligence is, in that animals have varying skills, but each class of animal hasn't really developed those skills over a period of time. Whereas you look at what humans have done in terms of science and technology, the radical transformation that has come about over centuries and certainly right now, where on the individual level, one's own intelligence builds upon what one already knows. And that has come about independent on what others have come to know. And through this, our technology and many other attributes have really become developed and advanced. And this is something that we experience and we can readily observe. So in our second and third line, one starts by recognizing that this body is unclean as well as why. But then one doesn't just leave it at that recognition. And whilst that recognition is of great importance, one can't just remain there in terms of our knowledge and understanding, because one may make the mistake of looking down at oneself. But actually, we have tremendous potential. Here the verse continues. From the unclean body we have taken to the body of a Buddha, a priceless jewel is transformed. And those last two words in the third line, is transformed, indicates that in dependence on this body and our intelligence, Buddhahood is achievable for all of us. For all of us, it is possible to transform ourselves from our current deluded state into the pure, perfected state of Buddhahood. That potential abides within all of us. And with that recognition, then the question arises, how do we transform? How do we transform ourselves from this current deluded state to a state of perfection? And the way that we transform our current state is through transforming our way of thinking, transforming our mind. And the technique to do so is to cultivate bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment. So therefore, it's in dependence on this unclean or contaminated body and mind that we can actually transform ourselves and transform ourselves into the supreme state of Buddhahood. Method for transforming ourselves is to cultivate bodhicitta within. And bodhicitta is the gold-making elixir. Just like the elixir transforms metal into gold, it's bodhicitta that transforms this unclean body into the body of a Buddha. And how does bodhicitta transform transform oneself into a Buddha? Buddhism encourages the cultivation of the mind. And whatever level one's at, one is encouraged to develop a mind of generosity, mind of ethical restraint, mind of patience, joyous perseverance, concentration, wisdom, and so forth. And these are essential to do. And all trainees, all students, no matter at what level, need to cultivate these. But when those self-same practices are conjoined with bodhicitta, then they become causes for Buddhahood. Then those same practices of generating a wish to give of oneself to others, generating a mind that restrains oneself from coming under the influence of afflictions, generating patience, joy, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom, all of these, when conjoined with Buddhahood, with bodhicitta, they become causes for Buddhahood. So it's this, in this way, that bodhicitta is the elixir that transforms ordinary virtuous minds into causes that lead to the attainment of Buddhahood. Bodhicitta, in English, the mind of enlightenment, is the determination to become a Buddha, first point. Second point, in order to alleviate all beings without exception from suffering. So it has those two components, of the determination to become a Buddha, and secondly, in order to, or so that, one can lead all beings without exception to Buddhahood. Bodhicitta is a result that comes about in dependence on the cultivation of specific causes. Amongst them, primarily, are love and compassion. And love and compassion, not just for some, but for all, without exception. Love is the strong, overwhelming wish, may all beings experience only happiness. And compassion is, may all beings be freed from suffering. So one first cultivates those, and then cultivates those two to the point where one develops the determination that I, myself, will lead each and every being to a state where they are freed from suffering. In other words, we fulfill our aspiration of compassion, and that they thereby abide in a state of lasting happiness. So thereby we fulfill our aspiration of love. So when one makes this commitment that I will do this, it is my personal responsibility, this then is developed to the point where bodhicitta is generated, the determination to become a Buddha for the sake of others. And when this is uncontrived, in other words, one doesn't intentionally need to generate it, then one has bodhicitta. From that presentation of the causes, one can see how important it is to cultivate love and compassion. And love and compassion, these are not mental qualities that are strangers to us. We all have them within us. There is a variety in terms of the strength of love and compassion within all of us. But that strength is not fixed. So just like a plant, we know if it's nurtured well, it will grow and blossom. And if it's not, it's going to either stay the same or may even weaken. So through nurturing our seeds of love and compassion, they will grow. And the way we nurture them is through meditation, through familiarity, developing our habituation to this way of thinking. And in particular, when meditation is based on knowledge, then that habituation will grow in a very stable and powerful way. How we will experience this transformation is when we encounter situations that perhaps we encountered in the past, now spontaneously love or compassion will arise within us. And with this spontaneous arisal of love and compassion, also will come the wish, I need to help. I need to do something to ease the suffering of others. So this way of thinking, we already have the seeds for, and through training our mind repeatedly over a sustained period, love and compassion will spontaneously, readily arise, and action will result. And here, you all made the decision to spend your time engaged in a Chenrezig retreat, cultivating love and compassion. This is truly wonderful. This is truly wonderful. It is so rare in this world. And here you are doing this. Second verse we'll look at this morning is a verse from this sutra called Compendium of Doctrines Sutra. Enlightenment is not bestowed by anyone, nor is it owned by someone. Through one's own thorough knowledge of the Dharma, faults are purified, qualities developed, and one is declared a Buddha.
那在讲述时间几满意时的这些讲述时间的那种上级的心也是现在的，因为跟他们现在的过去讲述上级和方式的讲述些的些。在时间几满意时的，但是现在俺们这个那中国多的，刚刚说的那，你现在这些看了这些嘛，中国多的东西啊，他就把你现在中国那个猪肉节，那就把你前几天没去吃些，那就要去给买了些土来，东西啊，全部了嘛。
那你那，你那些，讲究时间几满意些的，俺们说上级那些上级固定啊，那些托付都上对位呢。你现在这些上级固定些是，也得拿些票上这些呢，俺们俺们就讲这些呢，你讲就上级固定要的是那些内容嘛那些，讲究时间几满意些的。那这个你不，当不去过哈？
像是三月过了，最近的话，这个这些呢，那个就是三月下来了嘛，这些。
The first word, yeah, enlightenment. So this is it's the same meaning as the other term of Buddhahood. It is a state freed from faults. There's not a single fault left on the continuum, no matter how slight. Likewise, all good qualities have been developed to the point of perfection. That is the state of enlightenment or Buddhahood. Now in our lives, others help us. We have this interdependent relationship amongst beings. If we're cold, Someone who cares for us will give us some warm clothing. If we are hungry, someone will give us some food. If we are ill, a doctor will prescribe medication. However, no matter how strong one's yearning is for enlightenment, no one can bestow enlightenment upon us. And the reason for this is because Buddhahood is not owned by anyone. It is not that someone or Buddhas are keeping enlightenment to themselves. It's because enlightenment isn't owned by anyone, it cannot be given to us. So whilst Buddhahood is not owned by anyone and therefore cannot be bestowed by anyone, it doesn't mean that it's not attainable. It is attainable by anyone. Whoever tries, whoever strives repeatedly over this sustained period to cultivate the correct pathways, mental pathways, through cultivating the correct methods within themselves, Buddhahood will be attained. So therefore, despite it not being able to be given to us, we can attain it. The third and fourth line then present how this is done. Through one's own thorough knowledge of the Dharma, faults are purified, qualities developed, and one is declared a Buddha. Thorough knowledge of the Dharma comes down to a clear understanding of what should be adopted and what should be abandoned. In other words, which ways of thinking need to be adopted, strengthened, and cultivated within oneself, and which ways of thinking are to be abandoned. So which ways of thinking need to be eradicated? And how does one attain this? One needs knowledge. One needs knowledge to know what should be abandoned and what should be adopted and what should be abandoned. And the more thorough our knowledge, the more finer will be our understanding of the subtler levels of what should be adopted and how to do so, and what should be abandoned and how to do so. And whilst we are gathering this knowledge, we need to integrate it. Because mere knowledge, or knowledge on its own, will not lead to a transformation of our way of thinking. Knowledge that is integrated through recognizing that this knowledge is about us, it is personal, and therefore we need to apply it to our own way of thinking. This is what will lead to transformation. So what one needs to do is gather knowledge and continue to gather knowledge, and whilst gathering knowledge, integrate it through meditation. So the technique is integration through meditation based on knowledge. And in this way, we will be able to progressively engage in the cultivation of two pathways. One is the cultivation of good qualities, mind such as love and compassion, and develop them ever further. And on the other side, together with us, we will weaken and eventually abandon our afflictions, and eventually even the seeds and the imprints of those afflictions. And when all our good qualities are developed to the point where they are perfected, as well as all our faults completely eradicated, all our afflicted minds together with their seeds and imprints, it is at that point that our faults are purified, our qualities perfectly developed, and one is declared a Buddha. Knowledge we need to acquire is an understanding of which ways of thinking benefit self and others, particular love and compassion. Whilst one can understand quite readily what is meant, how love and compassion benefit ourselves as well as others, what one also needs to acquire knowledge of is how this is so, what is meant by love and compassion, how to cultivate love and compassion. All the varying techniques one needs to understand well. as well as the other virtuous minds. Then there's the other class that needs to be understood, and that is the afflicted minds. Because whilst love and compassion and other virtuous minds, they serve the purpose of benefiting ourselves as well as all others, the afflicted minds, they serve the purpose of harming ourselves and harming others too. In fact, we need to come to recognize the vivid clarity, not just what are the afflictions, such as anger and attachment, and the harm that they bring, but we really need to recognize that it's these afflictions alone that cause our pain and suffering. No one else causes us to suffer. It is these consciousnesses that abide within us that harm ourselves as well as others. This knowledge then needs to be gained, and it needs to be integrated through meditation. We need to meditate again and again, reducing the strength of afflictions and cultivating good qualities. So in particular, love and compassion. As we cultivate love and compassion within us, to the extent that love and compassion pervade our way of thinking, to that extent our afflictions will struggle to arise. For example, when we encounter someone who's clearly suffering and it takes that suffering out on us, if we've meditated well on love and compassion, that is what will arise within us. And because of the strength of our love and compassion for this angry person before us, anger within us won't arise. Love and compassion will. So in this way, there's a relationship between the strength of our virtuous minds, such as love and compassion, and the weakening of our afflicted minds, such as anger. Now, as we cultivate love and compassion ever further, to the point where we take personal responsibility for others, where our love and compassion is so strong and pervasive that we clearly, through experience, recognize the benefit that it's brought to our lives. We want others to as well. We take their state of their current state of very weak love and compassion. We take that state as our responsibility to become a skilled guide who can lead each and every being to a state of enlightenment themselves through developing love and compassion within themselves. In this way, we develop the determination to become the most skilled of guides of Buddha. And when that mind is uncontrived, it's bodhicitta that arises within us. And thereafter, we will know, through the knowledge we're gaining and are integrating, that bodhicitta on its own is insufficient. We need to engage in the development of other virtuous minds that we would have also been developing now, such as generosity, ethics, concentration, patience, joy, perseverance, and wisdom. Develop these two conjoined in bodhicitta, because these are the causes that lead to enlightenment. And in particular, we all know we need to cultivate wisdom, the wisdom that realizes emptiness, the wisdom that understands how all phenomena exist in reality. And it's through cultivating wisdom, as well as the other minds, such as generosity, ethics, etc., all conjoined with bodhicitta, that we will eradicate or purify all faults, and we will develop all good qualities to the point of perfection and attain Buddhahood. Or, as it was expressed in the previous verse, we will attain the body of a Buddha. We will transform our current unclean body into the priceless jewel of that of a Buddha. So this is how then Buddhahood is attained, through our own inner transformation, through integration of knowledge that we continuously acquire through meditation. And this is how these two verses work together.
Some of the young,
In order to truly transform ourselves, this requires repeated and sustained meditation based on knowledge. In terms of gathering knowledge, the starting point here is to gain vivid clarity of the benefits of meditating on love and compassion and the faults of not doing so. The benefits of being a loving and compassionate person and the faults of not being so. Just to mention the benefits in brief. When the minds of love and compassion arise, our mind is peaceful. This is because there's a direct relationship between the strength of virtuous minds and the weakness of afflicted minds. And when virtuous minds such as love and compassion are strong within us, harmful thoughts towards others or ourselves will not arise. And the more habituated we are to love and compassion, the deeper the impact, the stronger the integration into our way of thinking, the stronger the impact on our way of speaking, and a way of physically engaging with others. As we deepen love and compassion within us, our way of speaking towards others will be loving and compassionate. Our way of physically engaging with others will be loving and compassionate. And therefore, through thinking about this, we can see very clearly the benefits to ourselves as well as others. And we can recognize too that as we gain familiarity with this meditation, as we go about our daily activity, the results of the meditation will pervade us. And we will thereby add more joy to the world. All those that we encounter, we will bring joy and ease of mind to them, rather than adding to the pain that burdens being so. Not only then do we need to think about the benefits of developing love and compassion and the faults of not being loving and compassionate. We need to engage in the meditations, going through the various steps of how to develop love and how to develop compassion again and again. And that is the opportunity you have all created for yourselves here. You have session upon session to develop this familiarity, and you have a quiet and conducive environment outside, quiet in the sense of being undisturbed, so that you can keep these thoughts in mind whilst going about your activities outside of the meditation hall. And the hope is that through the experience based on your knowledge that you gain here, that when you return to your homes, You can meditate in the same way every day, and if your lifestyle permits, perhaps in the morning as well as the evening. Because to transform deep-seated habits, deep-seated habituations to the afflictions, and develop strong habituation to virtuous ways of thinking, such as love and compassion, takes repeated engagement over a sustained period. As this transformation starts to come about, not only will you enjoy your meditations and want to come back to the cushion later in the day or the following day, but you'll also be able to, when you're not in session, to recall what you meditated on that morning and keep it in mind, so that when you encounter others, you start to experience the arisal of love and compassion when you meet others. For example, when you see animals, you'll recognize that whilst their behavior may seem quite peaceful, that's just how it appears to us. Really, the problem that they are experiencing is limitations to their intelligence. They cannot transform themselves. If any, whichever insects are in this room, they do not understand what is being said. And even if it could be communicated to animals in a way they could, their intellect is too limited to develop their way of thinking. This means they are not creating causes for happiness. They are not able to overcome their suffering in any meaningful way. And recognizing this, whenever we see animals, compassion will arise within us for their suffering state, as well as love, the yearning, may they attain a rebirth like I have. May they attain a rebirth like I have, and meet the Dharma, transform their minds. And likewise, when we meet people, similar thoughts will arise. So, for example, when we meet those who are experiencing great suffering, they're telling us about their problems, or we're seeing it through the daily news, compassion will readily arise. And not just compassion, may they be free of suffering, but recognize the causes that lead to that, in particular their way of thinking that's leading to the suffering. And the compassion will arise as well as love. May they be freed of suffering. May they attain a state of lasting happiness. And as that way of thinking starts to arise within us readily, when we observe things, for example, when people telling us about their problems or what we see in our daily life, as that becomes more habituated, then so too when others act towards us in unwanted ways, the thought will arise, may the suffering person, this person who is overwhelmed by their own self-interest, may they experience happiness. May they be freed of self-interest. And in this way, evermore, our compassionate and loving way of thinking will pervade our mind and thereby pervade our speech and our physical interaction. And again, we will bring more joy and happiness into the world and bring ever less pain that burdens others.
也被那所说的那样一大学路进来所说的娘娘的那好古玩被那大学的那边进去被进去当去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去去
ngā chīng bārē. Ane, tā chī kūsō chī kī tī kī kāyā mē wā chī sāṁ dē tē dē wē nā, tā chī yā chī yē rā, chī shē rā, tā chē sīng dē tā wā chē sīng dū sā rāṁ sā dē, kē dū kī āshā sē dē yā chī, mā yā tō kā lā yā dā dī nē yō sī bā rā wā, chī tā dū sūng gō rā, chī tā dī nē sā, sō chī kī chē tā rā chē chē, kāp chī kāp rā dā dī bē dī bē, chī tī nī kī kī chō chē sā, chē sīng dū yō sā chāṁ chā rā dē chē nā,
你讲解的还有什么大事？那没放多少钱，等你写完了，剩下错还你一个。你，所需的天下天气的，我到后头第一句话，可能第一遍，后来剩下的，等你写上去，讲解过不去，多少钱？我打打起写完了，等你讲解过不了，你把那个，哎，读起来下，解释过下，下这干嘛？剩下干嘛？另外，现在干嘛？把这些。
I encourage you to really right now work with integrating this way of thinking within yourself. Every person who appears to mind, or every person, every living being that appears to mind, and we think of others that come into rise in our mental consciousness again and again and again, develop that habituation to think, may they experience only happiness. May they be freed of pain and suffering. And then no matter what one experiences, and think here right now of what's annoying you. It may be noises around you. It may be a disturbance either by sound or if an insect lands on oneself. Disturbance arises. And one thinks, I wish they were quiet. I wish they wouldn't make that noise. Why do they have to move papers or move their body in this way? So these thoughts naturally arise. Remind yourself, this is a being, a suffering being just like me. They long for happiness just like me. They long to be freed of pain just like me. May they experience only happiness. May they be freed of suffering. In this way, we are not disturbed by them anymore. We recognize them as no different from us and no less worthy than us of happiness. You think of your situation at home or in the place of work, when others are disturbing us, especially with noise, this really agitates our mind. Sometimes we may even phone the police and say, sort out my neighbors, I've had enough. So that is clearly a sign of a mind that is disturbed. Here, use the opportunities that present yourself in this meditation hall, around here, and then again from when you're home next week. Use those opportunities every time one thinks of someone else, have the thought, may they experience happiness. May they be freed from pain. So thank you. We'll stop there for today, and we'll see you again in a couple of days.